Welcome, everyone, to episode 347 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we have actual basketball to discuss. We have come a long way, friends, but we finally made it. The NBA is back. The seeding games have started. So we are recording this on Saturday afternoon, and we will touch on all the highlights from Thursday and Friday's action. Before we get into all that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we are now being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is a guy who, like me, is going to have to fight off divorce for the next 2 weeks while we watch basketball for 12 straight hours every day. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
It's going well, Brian, because I don't believe that the coronavirus is population control.
Well, that makes one of us between you and Michael Porter Jr., so that's good. Yeah.
My God, some of the opinions that we've seen lately.
I think not even with exclusively the NBA, but just in general, this thing has really given people an opportunity to expose themselves as just complete and utter idiots. Like, I look at, you know, Major League Baseball right now and how their, like, their whole COVID plan was basically pretend it doesn't exist. Like, just make up some, they have a protocol. It's like, don't be close to each other and don't shake hands, and all of them are doing it. And then the commissioner is coming out like, you guys aren't following my rules. When the rules were stupid, this never was going to work. And now they're seeing it. And like the NFL in a couple weeks, we're going to have the same problem. So honestly, I'm glad the NBA, I mean, you know, you and I were skeptical of this whole thing. We did not think we would be here at any point this year, right? Because, you know, I did not think of the feasibility of a bubble was actually able to be pulled off. But kudos to the NBA. We're going on 3 weeks now without a positive test. And I mean, it's too early to take the victory lap yet because we still got a long ways to go here. But I'm just glad the NBA is back and is taking this thing as seriously as it should be compared to some of these other sports leagues.
I agree. I how skeptical I was, and I'm still not there where I feel entirely comfortable. Mm-hmm. But I do feel way more certain about what is happening right now because it seems it's containable. It seems that what they've done is set up some parameters that is actually working. And I also got to give the players credit.
Yeah.
Like the vast majority of the players appear to take this thing very, very seriously. Like I've been on radio in like a fair bit here in Denmark in recent weeks because people want to know like what's going on in the bubble. And you know, this has been one of the things that I've been asked like all the time, like how do the players feel about this? Is it almost like prison and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. And like, no, they seem very upbeat.
Yeah.
Like they seem very positive. I mean, I understand there's going to be some days where just like, wow, I'm stuck here and you kind of get depressed about it. But overall, I find that players are basically making up reasons for why this is all a good thing, which is what they should be doing, and I love it. So kudos to the players, kudos to the NBA. It's working so far. I've been like last night when I was watching, was it Blazers Memphis? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not gonna lie, there was a point where the coronavirus was kind of not in my mindset.
Yeah,
it was gone. The sheer entertainment purpose or entertainment value just kind of overwhelmed me, which was fun, Brian. I forgot what fun was. This is 2020. I'm not accustomed to what fun is anymore.
And thankfully, the Sixers haven't played yet, so I have like 4 more hours before I'm going to get sad about basketball. I can still be in the fun-loving part for now.
Nice. Get really, really drunk then and make the most of it.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, hopefully, if people will just like stay home for the next 2 weeks and watch basketball all day, every day, like, maybe the NBA could be coronavirus control. Just, like, convince people not to be dumb and going out because you just want to watch basketball all the time. Let's hope.
So this is, it's funny you bring that up. Like, this was a point that was made on Twitter by some random account who basically just said, just imagine all of this goes away if everyone just stays inside for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, it all goes away. If everyone complies for just 3 weeks and stay inside. Stock up, stay inside for 3 weeks, everything is over.
Yep.
Puts it all into perspective sometimes.
I know. It really does. But unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen. But also, I mean, before we get into the action going on currently, kudos to the NBA as well. The stories came out this week that Michelle Roberts on Tuesday spoke with Tim Bontemps, said they're already discussing plans for next year, and they're already floating the idea of bubbles or regional pods or something. So, you know, that has been throughout this entire thing. 2021 has been my big concern. Like, I thought maybe they could pull this thing off, but nothing materially is probably going to change by December unless we have a vaccine and is widely distributed, which I hope will be the case, but I don't think you can plan on that, especially if you're a sports league. So I'm glad that the NBA is actually using this lead-up time that they've got to, you know, say, hey, you know, we have a potential problem here. We probably can't follow the MLB's plan or NFL's plan. And on the bright side, they have a couple months to see how these things go, but early returns on MLB are not great. So, you know, shouts to the NBA for already being proactive and looking ahead to next season. I wrote a thing at Forbes this week. It's going to be a lot harder to pull this off for a full regular season because we're just talking about, you know, the length of eight seeding games plus the playoffs versus 82 games plus the playoffs. You know, will families be allowed? Will coaching's families and staffers' families be allowed? That was a big sticking point in this one, and it's a lot shorter duration. So there are a lot of obstacles to overcome, but again, shouts to the NBA for at least using this time wisely, unlike some of their other colleagues in the sporting world.
Right. But before we, you know, fellatio the NBA too hard, we should also, you know, mention that at some point, you know, in a later episode, we're definitely going to be talking about the whole China NBA Academy thing.
Yeah. Yes, well, we will save that probably just because I want to focus. There have been, I mean, we have 2 games worth of, or 2 days worth of games so far, and there's already been a ton to talk about, Mort. So,
big time.
Let's just start, I guess, chronologically and start with Thursday night. We tipped off with Jazz Pelicans. Zion was questionable heading into that game. He did play, but that was one of the big storylines coming out, is that he was on limited minutes. They were only allowed to play him in short bursts. He played only 15 minutes in the game, did not close it out in the fourth quarter, which Alvin Gentry got properly roasted for. What are your thoughts, Mort? I mean, of course, they're going to be careful with Zion. He was out of the bubble for a while dealing with a family matter, so they're ramping him back up and getting him back into the game shape. But do you think this was an issue with Gentry's minutes distribution? Like, should he have saved a couple of those minutes for closing time, or is he being unfairly pilloried here for how he juggled rotations on Thursday?
I think it's a little bit unfairly, even though I actually agree with the criticism that, of course, you have to make sure that your very best player needs to be playing at the end of the game, especially a closed one. I still think overall he's taking it, like, he's taking a little bit too much criticism here, because, like, he is just trying his best to make sure that his number one guy is going to stay healthy on the long term. Mm-hmm. I can't fault a coach for that. Sure, he made a mistake. He should have just dispersed it differently, as you said. But, I mean, okay, at the end of the day, so what? It's one game, I get it, and I understand that this could have, you know, dramatic implications for the playoffs. I get it. But look, they're not going to win the championship anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not what we're looking at here. This is an attempt to get as far as they can and get some experience in them. And I look, all that is logical, but Zion's health is numero uno. There's no two ways about it for me. And if the medical staff and if the Pelicans, like, determined this was the best course of action, then I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm a doctor and say, well, you know what? Because I don't know what. I have no idea. So right. I'm just going to, you know, trust that the Pelicans are adequate at understanding what, you know, they're doing.
Yeah, they have his best interests at heart here. And as you said, they're taking the long-term approach. This is not a team whose win now window is closing. They're not even at the opening of their win now window. They've got plenty of time here. So, yeah, I mean, would we have loved to see Zion play more? Yes. Would you have loved to see him at the end of a close game? Yes. But as you said, I mean, you got to just trust the medical staff here. And Gentry said that after the game as well. Like, he's conferring with them closely. This is not, you know, he's not making this decision on his own. So I understand the frustration from Pelicans fans in particular, because, you know, you lose a game with, as you said, with major playoff implications. You basically lose it at the buzzer. That sucks. And it's like, you know, with only eight games, it's, you know, you don't have much margin for error here, especially with, you know, so many other teams in that mix for the 8-9 seed for that play-in tournament. So I get the frustration, but like you, I'm not going to kill Alvin Gentry over it. Like, I'm sure, you know, I wasn't on Twitter Thursday night, but I can only imagine the number of Pelicans fans calling for Alvin Gentry's head, because that seems to be a common theme all year. I would not go that far by any means.
Nope, me neither.
But what about the Jazz, Mort? This is our first time we see them without Bojan Bogdanović, who did not participate in the restart because he underwent surgery. We saw a more aggressive Mike Conley. He was second on the team in shot attempts. He had 20 points on 7 of 16 shooting. Rudy Gobert seemed to be aggressive early in the game on offense especially, and then he hits the game-winning free throws. Jordan Clarkson, great off the bench again. Donnie Mitchell filling the stat sheet up. What'd you think of the Jazz?
I think they look more or less like what they looked as before, just with a more competent, or not competent, that's unfair, but a more, I'm looking for the right term here, a more comfortable, I think, Mike Conley. That seems to be your thing. I mean, right, and I get it, not having Bogdanović, well, let's not pretend like he wasn't missed. I mean, they went 8 for 34 from 3. They shot 23.5%. That is not great.
It's
not going to win them any games. So that is definitely one area of concern still. But they toughed it out as they do. They have this tendency to be in games that they, on the surface, really shouldn't be in, and then they just somehow squeeze it out. This has been one of their calling cards for, I want to say, at least the last two seasons. So I'm just seeing a Jazz team that's kind of replicated what they did in the regular season before it got suspended. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that Donovan Mitchell takes a small step up from here on out, because with Bogdanović not there, I'm pretty certain the Jazz are going to need him to start averaging 30 sooner than later.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, does this game at all change your perception about the Jazz, where they stand in the West, their chances of coming, you know, winning a playoff series regardless of who they face?
No, and I can save you some time. That question for me, I can never answer such a thing just based on one game. Like, one game will never sway my opinion.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, if I'm a Jazz fan, I'm excited about all the things we just talked about. The concern, of course, would be, you know, you're really only going six deep in terms of reliable offensive options. And, I mean, that's even stretching it a bit for Royce O'Neal. He played well, shot well on Thursday, but, you know, it's the five starters and Jordan Clarkson, and then, you know, it's Yang, Tony Bradley, Emmanuel Mudiay off the bench otherwise, but that bench is thin, especially, you know, if they go against Houston, it's going to be the same thing on Houston's end, especially if Eric Gordon is still banged up by the time that first round comes around. But if you're going against Denver, you're going against the Clippers somehow, you know, that those are deep teams that I would not be very confident in the Jazz's ability to hang in especially a long series. I mean, that's the problem. Like, we have games, these seeding games every other day, plus one back-to-back for each team. Then we have, I think, a two-day layoff, and then the playoffs start, and I think those are going to be every other day. So you're reducing the wear on your body in terms of travel, which is good, but it's still, I mean, you get five, six, seven games into this series, and if your starters are playing 35 minutes a night each, you know, by game five or six, you might start to have some dead legs. So,
yeah,
you know, it was a great win for the Jazz and a bummer of a loss for the Pelicans, but I'm still iffy on the Jazz winning a first round series down here, depending on who they play.
Yeah, and you would be. I mean, look, they also made 11 more free throws, you know, in a 2-point win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not an advantage they're going to see every single game.
Right.
So, you know, you can take the win away and say, okay, that's cool, but there are definitely some underlining concerns that you need to be ahead of if you're the Jazz moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go to the Clippers-Lakers game, Mort. That was the headliner Thursday night. The Lakers eke out a 103-101 win. LeBron hits, he attempts a game-winning shot, misses, gets his own rebound, puts it back, and then the Clippers try to go for the win, and LeBron plays incredible defense on both Kawhi Leonard and Paul George in the last few seconds. But, I mean, he had an off game offensively, only 6 of 19 shooting, did, you know, do his normal LeBron thing, 11 rebounds, 7 assists. Anthony Davis, just a total monster, 34 points, game high. You know, on the Clippers' end, it was the Kawhi and Paul George show. Paul George, man, he, like, we talked about him recently in terms of, you know, he's one of the better shooters in the NBA, but he doesn't have that reputation. But, like, my God, it's just every time he pulls up, I think it's going in.
Yeah. No, I agree. And, look, I think you talked about this a couple episodes ago as well. You know, just not having the fans in the background. Like, he's just locked in right now.
Yeah.
He is completely locked in. Like you, whenever he pulls up, even if it's a little bit further out, I'm just like, that's a bucket.
Yeah.
That's a bucket. Like, he's getting that Steph Curry rhythm right now. I don't know if that's a thing, but it almost seems like it. You can almost tell when Steph is in rhythm, and it seems like Paul is kind of that same way now.
Mm-hmm.
You can sort of, you know, smell it out a little bit when he gets on a hot streak. Like, he's dynamic as all hell. And to be honest with you, I almost felt like that should have gone the Clippers' way. But when you look at what LeBron did defensively, you know, I have not seen this defensive effort from him, at least at this kind of stage, you know, in years. I understand that he played better defense over the course of the regular season. I truly do. But this was something else. This was LeBron 8 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, that was playoff LeBron in the regular season. Which,
like, I've not seen that for a while. That was very interesting.
Yeah. You know, this has been the presumed Western Conference Finals all year. Did this change your perception again? I know it's one game, but
no.
Okay. If anything, it made me less confident in the Lakers. Like, I mean, I know LeBron had an off game offensively, but for the Clippers to be without Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, Patrick Beverley only plays 16 minutes, and it was still that close?
Yeah.
That's not a good sign for the Lakers.
It isn't. And at the same time, like, okay, so the counter argument would be the Lakers shot 39% from the field, 30% from downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you do, and they threw the ball away 16 times. So those are all very negative stats, and they still came out with a W.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the counter argument, but I agree with you. When you throw, like, Lou in there, when you throw Harrell in there, maybe when Noah gets more, you know, more games under his belt, because, you know, even though he played in the scrimmages as well, like, he's been out for a while, right? So he needs to regain some of that. And then you look at what happened in the game. Like, Landry Shamet went 1-for-8 and didn't even hit a three. Is that going to duplicate itself? I don't think it will.
Mm-hmm.
The only true concern that I have, if I'm the Clippers, is Marcus Morris.
Don't even get me started.
We thought, you know, he would come in and be very, very good. And so far, he just hasn't. He hasn't been able to find his place on these Clippers. And I remember, I took a lot of crap when I said on this podcast that he was more or less just putting up empty stats in New York. There were a couple people on Twitter who went at me, but, like, look, now he's on a good team and he can barely stay on the court.
So,
like, what's that all that about?
You know, like, FanDuel, one of those DFS sites, they gave $10, like, a free credit, $10 to everyone because sports were coming back. So I entered a few of the contests Thursday night. I would have won $3,000 if I had played Kyle Kuzma over Marcus Morris. I otherwise had, like, the winning lineup, but I had Kuzma, or I had Marcus Morris instead of Kyle Kuzma, so I won $7 instead.
Oh,
I woke up, I was watching the game, but I wasn't watching the FanDuel League or whatever. So, like, I went to bed. Yeah, I knew I probably had won some money because I had picked, like, Reggie Jackson. I had picked Kawhi and Paul George. And then I woke up and checked it. I was like, oh, man, son of a. That was, it's the closest I've ever been to having, like, the nuts line up, except it hurts even worse knowing you were one person away from that kind of money. So, yeah, Marcus Morris, I hope you get benched. you suck. I was very mad when I woke up Friday and saw that. But, yeah. But no, I agree with you. I mean, he has definitely been disappointing. And Kuzma, to his credit, played extremely well on Thursday
night. He did.
But, yeah, I mean, the concerns that we've had about the Lakers, I think, you know, showed themselves in this game. Like, Dion Waiters played pretty decently. Caruso, you know, I know he's a meme at this point, but, like, honestly, he did have some big defensive plays, especially at the end there.
Well, he's good.
Yeah.
Like, we've talked about this. He is actually a legitimately good player. He's not a star, as some Lakers fans would insinuate, but, like, perfectly capable role player.
Right. But, again, I mean, when you're comparing the depth of these two teams, right, you know, even if Marcus Morris can't get it together, when you add Lou and Trez back in there, like, Reggie Jackson is a big pickup for them. He played legitimately well for them. Having that, I mean, Bev will move back into the starting lineup once he gets his conditioning back, but having that ball handler off the bench, like, he is a credible backup point guard. He is better than, you know, whoever the Lakers are going to roll out, even when Rondo comes back. And Joakim Noah, I mean, didn't put up much in terms of stats, but, like, he doesn't look washed to me.
No, well, he's not, and he proved that last year. I just, you know, I've seen Joe close up for years and years and years, and you can just sense when he's in it and when he's not, and, like, when he's, like, a step slow. And right now, he physically, he seems just one step slow.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a matter of time. And it's not even going to be, like, a substantial amount of time. It might just be, like, another two or three games and then he's there, because he's just so smart.
Sure.
He'll find a way, and he'll find, like, he'll pick something up. And then his energy level, this is what I really love about Noah. Like, he can struggle for two or three games. Then he can do something where he finds success in game three, and he'll just go back to it again and again and again, and then just from there start to build up something.
Yeah.
And like, those are truly, like, the mindset of great players. Noah just never had the raw skill set to be one of the truly elite players, like, in the history of the league. But in terms of, like, his intelligence level and the way that he kind of feeds himself energy, like, he's right up there. So I have zero concerns there. What I have also just one small concern about is, why is it that Subac isn't playing more? I understand he's not a shooter. And, like, that's why you probably want Patrick Patterson or Jamichael Green in there a little bit more. But Subac is good. Like, he is legitimately a good center. He can give you a ton of points. He can give you rebounds. He can give you blocks. He can do so efficiently as well. Like, he's even a very good, you know, positional defender. I just don't understand why, you know, the Clippers keep insisting on, like, keeping him back and giving him these, like, 12, 15, sometimes 18 minutes. This is a guy who should be playing 25.
Yeah, I mean, especially with Trez out, you would expect him, you know, right. Because, like, Trez will play small ball center, you know, when he is healthy and in the lineup. But with him out, yeah, you probably would have expected to see him a little bit more than you did.
Yeah, I mean, Jamichael Green and Patrick Patterson, fine. But they played over 50 minutes combined and scored, what, 13 combined points?
Right, yeah.
Like, you can do better. But we also have to... This is the thing with Subac, which bothers me. For him to really get into a flow, you also have to feed him just a little bit early. Like, that's one of the things. He's like one of those old-school centers where if you feed him a little bit early, you're going to get some results. If you kind of ignore him for the first quarter, he's just, like, sort of, like, slumps and isn't really engaged. So that's, like, he isn't one of those guys who'll just kind of turn himself on, like Noah, for example.
Right.
But I would argue that, you know, going over that hurdle is worth it. Like, if you need to feed him the ball a couple times in the first quarter, just do it. It's okay. You don't need to give him 10 shots. Just like, give him 3, 4. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can overcome that even if you're in a little bit of a hole. Why? Because you have Kawhi, damn Leonard, and Paul George at your disposal.
Yeah.
Like just go to Zubac a little bit more. I know that he was in foul trouble as well. It's not that, but I look, even without the foul trouble, I'm pretty certain he wasn't going to crack 30 minutes.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah, I mean...
Right.
The argument you want to make is that, like, yes, you're going to downsize a lot. Trez is going to play small ball center a lot, but there could be certain matchups in which you need a bigger, more traditional center. So you need to at least condition him to, you know, in these, like, higher profile minutes, we're going to need you. We're going to need to count on you. Are you up for it? Like, and, you know, these seeding games for the Clippers, because they're not going to fall below 3. So who cares? I mean, if you're the 2 or the 3 seed, big deal. You're going to lose your virtual fans for one game. Oh, no. You know, seeding does not matter for them. So this should be the time for experimentation.
Right.
But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens with them as the seeding games move on. They've got a big game tonight against the Pelicans. It should be really fun to watch.
Yeah. One final note, though. You know, AD, man.
Yeah.
The way that he can get himself to the free throw line all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen him get to the line a lot before, but there was a moment, like, in that game where you just kind of saw he can get there whenever he wants to.
Yeah. Turns out he and LeBron James are very good at basketball. Even
who knew?
Even when LeBron isn't scoring, they could both impact the game in a number of ways. It's shocking, yep. Really.
It's tremendous. I never had a clue.
No, I know. This is the analysis you get from this podcast.
Yeah.
LeBron James, good at basketball. The end.
News at 11.
All right, let's move into Friday's action. We're not going to hit every game because I have nothing nice to say about Magic Nets, so I will say nothing at all.
That's fair.
Let's go to Grizzlies Blazers, though, because that was a sensational game. We got to start with Yusuf Nurkic, right? I mean, this is the guy's first game back in more than a year, and he looked phenomenal. I mean,
dude. 18, 9, 5, and 6 blocks.
Yeah. Just all over the place.
I have no words. I was so happy for him.
Yeah.
And remember, there was a point, I believe it was... I don't remember it was in, like... It felt like it was in the late stages of the game. So I don't know if it was overtime or the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, I don't even remember when he fouled out. He did foul out, but I just don't remember when for some reason. He had this back to the basket move, and he spun and he hit the layup, and he was just like he was out of himself.
He
was screaming, and and you could just see that was more than just him getting the bucket.
Yeah,
you know, this was I can do this again. Mm-hmm. I am back on the court doing what I've done for the vast majority of my life again.
Yeah.
I am back. That was just an awesome, awesome moment to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm thrilled for him, thrilled for Zach Collins as well. He did not have nearly as good of a game as Nurkic, but just good to see him back on the floor.
Right.
I mean, your Gary Trent Jr. love came through, 17 points off the bench.
Finally, come on, man. Hey, he's turning into a legit 3-and-D guy.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I have some of the same concerns with the Blazers that I do with the Jazz, but, you know, if Trent's legit, I mean, Whiteside is going to give you minutes off the bench, too. And, like, that starting five, they're good. I mean, if the Pelicans lose tonight against the Clippers, like, the Blazers are now pretty considerable favorites to force that play-in tournament, I would think.
I would love it. I would absolutely love to see Portland get a run in, because... what happened last year, I mean, I didn't want that just to be lightning in a bottle.
Yeah. And, I mean,
I want to see how far they can go.
Yeah, I mean, like, we just saw a Grizzlies-Blazers game is super entertaining, goes into overtime. You know, getting one or two of those for a play-in spot or, like, a playoff spot, that'd be incredible. It'd be super fun.
I will say this, though. If Jonas Valanciunas hadn't been in foul trouble,
yeah,
this game would have gone Memphis's way.
Yeah.
Look, he played 14 minutes and picked up 5 fouls. Okay. But in those 14 minutes, he scored 16 points, grabbed 4 boards, and got to the line 8 times. Oh, and he hit a 3.
Yeah.
I've said this repeatedly on this podcast. I'm going to reiterate myself. Jonas Valanciunas is really, really good. And now this was on him, like picking up the fouls. Mm-hmm. So that's like, I'm not blaming anyone here. But this is a guy, when matchups allows, just play him. This is the Subac thing all over, except Valanciunas is so much better.
Oh, yeah.
Just ride him. Just ride him until you can sort of sense that defenses are kind of clocking it in against him. And that's when you just go, hey, Ja, Jaren, take over.
Yeah. And Jaren, I think he's listened to the podcast over the past few months, because every time you've clamored for someone to take a ton of threes, Jaren Jackson Jr. attempted 15 threes in this game.
Yeah.
Hit 6 of them. Yeah. I mean, that's 40%.
I love it. Like, he is just, he's gunning. And I understand that when I've had a couple people reach out to me and say, you just want everybody to shoot threes.
Yeah.
That's, yes, okay. I would just want everyone to have that shot in their bag, is what I want to say. Jared is just leaning into it big time, and I'm loving it. Like, yeah. Next year, could you imagine if he puts up, like, Harden stats in terms of, like, 12 to 13 three-point field goal attempts per game? I wouldn't hate that.
If he's going to stay this efficient with it. I mean,
I don't see why not. He's shot almost 40% this year.
Yeah. Like, that's what makes him so special. I know there's some skepticism over him still because, like, he doesn't... I mean, he only had 3 rebounds in 43 minutes. That is not ideal. But offensively, if he can stretch the floor like this and benefit off of Ja Morant's explosive athleticism, you know, like, he can be that pick-and-pop partner for Ja Morant. He can be waiting out the corner off of driving kicks. Like, that raises the Grizzlies' ceiling significantly.
Mm.
And then you've got a guy like Brandon Clark coming off the bench, who is not by any means the unicorn big that Jaren Jackson Jr. is, but he's just a steady, good player. I cannot stress enough how much I like. Like, if I could buy a ticket to some one team's future right now, the Grizzlies would be very high on that list.
Brandon Clark is a guy who just understands what a good shot is.
Yeah.
I look, that sounds oversimplistic, but it's not. This is a highly valuable skill in the NBA, understanding when to take a shot, how to take a shot, and again, when basically just to not force yourself in a situation, like, even if you have a mismatch, like, do you feel certain about it? Like, Brandon Clark has turned down a lot of shots over his first season, where some fans are basically saying, why? You had someone on you, yada, yada, yada. But look, normally I would blame every player for not taking advantage of that. But there seems to be, for him, some sense in this whole idea, like, no, I can get something better.
Mm-hmm.
And but at the same time, he doesn't do it in the way that Ben Simmons does it, because he doesn't have that whole, you know, responsibility of feeding everyone else.
Right.
So he's basically saying, you know what, it's fine. I'm not one of the key guys. I'll give the ball to Ja, I'll give the ball to Jaren. You know, and they suck in the defense, and then, you know, maybe 5-6 seconds later in the same possession, I'll actually have a dunk instead of, you know, a 7-foot push shot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a better shot for me. Like, his intelligence level is right there. I completely agree with you. I love it. And you know what? This is a guy we should keep an eye out for Sixth Man of the Year moving forward.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is a two-way guy.
Yep.
This is a guy who, gasp, actually plays defense.
What?
What?
A Sixth Man of the Year is allowed to do that?
Yeah, I know, right? But, you know, you brought up the Grizzlies here. There's something I want to talk about. So, I'm going to go back, what is it, 22 years now? 23, 22 years? Remember when Kevin Garnett and Stephon Marbury played together?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Sort of. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, Steph didn't want to share the spotlight. And that he asked out of Minnesota. He was like, nope, not going to do it. I want the same amount of responsibility, and I'm not getting it alongside KG. Mm-hmm. Always one of his biggest mistakes ever. One could argue that, you know, that same situation is there in Memphis, except Ja and Jaren are just like, we love each other. Like, we want the very best for one another.
Yeah.
We embrace this pairing. We are right here alongside each other. We're communicating. We're talking. Like, when you watch a game and you see how often those two just kind of, like, chat, talk, just kind of point, and, like, they're in constant dialogue, mm-hmm. it seems. I love that. I love how they're embracing this whole shared duo kind of thing where it's not, hey, I want all the shots. No, I don't want all the shots.
Right.
It's, I don't care. We just want some points on this possession, or we want to stop defensively. They're doing everything in their power just to, you know, be there. These guys are 20 years old, Brian.
Yeah.
20. Yeah. I'm completely amazed at what they've done in such a short period of time.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, all the stories that we've heard in recent months about the friction between Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, where, you know, Rudy's frustrated sometimes that Donovan won't pass him the ball or, like, misses him for lobs, and he wants to be more of an offensive threat. And, like, he's mad that he's not the marquee guy, he's not the number one option anymore, like, that Donovan's getting all the attention. Jaren could have easily done that because Jaren came before Ja, and, you know, Jaren was looked as like, we're moving on from the grit and grind Grizzlies, and he's going to be the future. He is the next Z-Bo. He's the next Marcus Gasol. He's our next great big man. And then Ja Morant right. comes in. Now he's going to be Rookie of the Year. He's going to get that top billing. Like, but Jaren Jackson Jr. could have taken the Rudy Gobert route where he gets salty about it. Or I think Jaren Jackson Jr. probably realizes, I need someone like Ja Morant. Like, if I have a point guard like Ja Morant, he's only going to make me better. And we're only going to yep. win more. And then we're both going to get more famous. We're both going to get the national TV time and the media exposure, whatever. So you're right. I mean, it's like, kudos to a 20-year-old for having that foresight and being able to recognize that. And hopefully that lasts. I mean, it's still early in their partnership. Friction could arise. But yeah, again, like, given the Grizzlies' amount of cap space next summer or next offseason, whatever the offseason may be, I know they're not a marquee free agent destination by any means, but, like, I do wonder if, you know, one of the big name free agents looks at what Memphis does. We'll see what happens in the bubble here. We'll see what happens next year. But if they continue on this trajectory, they should be interesting to, you know, if I was a star free agent and I see, like, oh, yeah. they have max cap space and then some. Why couldn't I be part of a big three with Ja and Jaren and Brandon Clark yep. off the bench? And, you know, like, Dylan Brooks is just a good player. I mean, just a fundamentally sound, good player on a reasonable contract. Like, they've
don't tell that to Memphis fans. They hate the guy right now.
Why?
Because they don't like his shot selection. Yeah.
No, he's, I mean, like, you can make the argument that maybe that contract ages poorly, but they made that contract before they knew what was about to happen with COVID. Like, would he get that contract now? Probably not, just because you right. got to tick everyone down about $5 million. But given what they knew at the time, that was a totally reasonable deal.
So you just brought up, like, the maturity level of Jaren Jackson Jr.
Mm-hmm.
I have a theory, which, again, it's just a theory.
Okay.
You'll remember who his dad was. That's Jaren Jackson Sr.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who won a championship with the Spurs and played 4 years with the San Antonio Spurs. Mm. And he played there, and, like, he joined the Spurs in Tim Duncan's rookie season. So he played 4 years with Tim. Do you think, by any chance, because I certainly do, that Jaren is in his son's ear telling him, when I played with Tim Duncan, you know what yeah. what made him great? I wouldn't be shocked whatsoever if Jaren, like, just basically had this school of thought that, hey, you know what? My dad's been filling my head with Tim Duncan propaganda over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I'm going to live up to that. Yeah. I'm going to try to actually you know, take on that maturity level that he constantly talks about. Because let's be honest, if you have been a teammate of Tim Duncan for over 4 years, are you not going to spend the rest of your life talking about him?
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, it's probably good perspective to give to his son to say, like, you know, this team had success. We achieved exactly what every team hopes to achieve, and a large part of the reason why was a guy like Tim Duncan or a guy like Manu Ginobili, who, you know, could have gone to another team and gotten a bigger role, been a starter, whatever, but because he was willing to sacrifice and play the role that his team needed him to, this is what happened. So for Jaren Jackson Jr., it's, you know, do we need you to be a 13 rebound a game guy? No, not right now, because we have Valanciunas, we have Brandon Clark, we have other guys who can do that. What we need you to do is be a floor stretcher. And he, to his credit, has really embraced that role. You know, it started kind of midway through this season, and clearly, if this first game is any indication, it's only gone up in the 4 months since. So I'm really excited to see what happens with both of these teams, Grizzlies and Blazers, in the next 7 games. Because I think it's not unfeasible that 2 weeks from now we're discussing a play-in game between these two teams.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah. Before we get to Bucks-Celtics, I do want to say one quick word about the Phoenix Suns, because I feel like we are often harsh on them, and it's really more their management and their ownership than the team itself. I think, you know, Devin Booker, we talked about as an All-NBA candidate this year, and DeAndre Ayton, especially this year, I think deserves a ton of credit for how much he's improved on both ends of the floor. But in these scrimmages and then this first game against the Wizards, like, I don't want to read too much into any results against the Wizards in the bubble, because it's, you know, the Phantom Wizards, the Corpse Wizards, like Bertans, Beal, John Wall aren't there, so who really cares? You're beating down Isaac Bonga. Congratulations. But Ayton, I mean, 24-12, 2 threes, 3 assists, 2 blocks. It's been impressive, man. Like, the Suns really do have, between Booker, Ayton, Kelly Oubre, and Mikal Bridges, they have some really good young talent. I'm intrigued to see where this team goes. I really do hope that management does not screw this up, because the track record would suggest in recent years that that's probably where we're headed. But, like, they have the foundation to actually be a good team, and I just hope they can actually build on it moving forward.
Right. And I'm also going to give some credit to Cameron Johnson, because, you know, one thing is he was probably picked a little bit too high considering his age, but at the same time, one could make the argument he's NBA ready, and that's fair. And it's also true, because defensively, he's been pretty good. We already know that he can shoot the ball, and he has shot the ball very, very well here in his first season. But he's actually developed into quite an efficient defender, all things considered, given that this is his first NBA season. There's definitely some upside there. Now, the question, of course, remains, how much upside, given that he's already 24? But I like the floor, if you catch my drift. Yeah. Like, the ceiling might not be incredibly high, but I can definitely see a scenario wherein the floor is pretty high, actually, for him. So if the Suns are ready to move forward with that, and, like, hey, you know what? That's all go Suns. That's pretty good. But you're right. It's been their management. It's been, like, the constant, you know, controversy surrounding them, all the weird roster moves, you know. And it didn't really help matters the way that they just kind of gave up on CJ Warren and traded for nothing. Right. That was just, I still think that was a mistake. I mean, I think they could have, you know, stood even stronger now had they probably done their due diligence, because I have to question whether they did. But
they gave up a pick, like, the rest to get rid of TJ Warren. Not even they did gave him away. They gave up an asset to get rid of him. And I mean,
you're right.
Like, that's what we're saying. It's the management that, when you're giving up a guy like TJ Warren, who was on a reasonable contract and is a perfectly fine player, is playing a role for a good playoff team this year, like, you are hindering your team's ceiling by doing stupid things like that. So hopefully they do not continue to do stupid things, because they really could have something. I'm not saying this core is necessarily going to win a championship together, but, like, the playoff drought could easily snap. If they were in the East, they'd be the 7th seed right now, for sure. It would smash the Nets and the zombie wizards.
What kind of pick are they looking at this year? Was it this year's pick they gave up? No, right?
I don't remember off the top of my head. Still, I think they still have this one.
No, they still have theirs. Yeah, they still have theirs. It's interesting because I'm not going to say they win the lottery because obviously we don't know. But you know, if they move up a couple spots, there's another guy, right? I mean, there's just another piece to the puzzle.
Yeah.
And I would almost argue for the Suns specifically, given where they are, where most of their players are, you know, at least not under the age of 20, but they're like in the 22 to 24 year range, might behoove them to try to see what they can actually get for that draft pick, like for a more established player. Because if they add another rotation caliber player in there this summer, or summer, see, I keep saying summer too.
I know.
Yeah, this coming off season, that could be a legitimate thing.
Yeah, I guess the question, as always, is which teams will be. Again, it depends on where they land in the lottery, of course, but which teams will be looking to move up in this draft? Or, I mean, maybe they will. I mean, maybe if the Suns land in that late lottery range, that's where teams will actually want to land. Because, I mean, that's kind of, based on the reporting I saw, Jonathan Wasserman had a piece of Bleacher Report the other day, you know, saying a lot of teams, executives expect the teams, whichever teams land the first few picks, they're going to want to move down. Because they want to move to that like 6 to 9, 6 to 10, 6 to 11 range where they see guys who have similar upside. You're paying them less, but you know, you're honestly more confident in their floor, like a Devin Vassell. It sounds teams are really high on him, it sounds like.
Or Sadiq Bey
from
Villanova.
Right. Yeah. So
how do you pronounce that first name? Is it Sadiq or Sadiq?
I would think Sadiq, but we would need a draft expert because I do not watch college basketball.
No, but see, the thing is, I do, but I've heard both.
Oh, really?
Like, even the commentators don't seem to know. I'm getting very, like, inconsistent pronunciations. It was the same with Onyeka Okongwu, and it was the same with a bunch of guys. Like, I'm getting different results. But either way, like, that's a guy who would fit in that age group, like, already 21 years old, a great shooter, a guy who can, like, just stretch the floor. Or, you know, something that hit me the other day, which I thought was interesting. So one of the NBA comparisons to Obi Toppin from Dayton is sort of a small, you know, a lesser version of Amari Stoudemire.
Oh.
I mean, the Suns already had
Stad. Right. They have experience with that kind of player.
They do, right? So, I mean, I know that it's not the same team on board, but I mean, just still, that would be interesting. Having a four-man who can just attack the rim relentlessly, especially if Aiden is going to embrace the three-pointer.
Yeah.
I would be intrigued.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the point overall is that I honestly, genuinely like the potential of the Suns. We just hope they don't screw it up.
Yeah, that's the best way to put
it. But, I mean, really, Aiden in particular, I mean, he's always going to be dogged with, you know, they could have taken Luka and they took you instead. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't think he's ever going to outgrow that. But he is developing into a very good player on his own. It's, I mean, I'm not getting, like, the same vibes with him as I am with Marvin Bagley, at least.
No, I think the best thing they can hope for is, you know, the Hakeem Michael kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, you took Hakeem, but you should have probably taken Michael, but Hakeem brought you two rings, so it's fine.
Yeah.
But you just don't want to be Sam, you know, Porter who took Sam Bowie.
Right. That's a very good comparison, yes.
Right.
All right, let's get into Bucks Celtics, Mort.
Yes.
All-NBA team, Jason Tatum. 2 of 18 from the field.
Yeah, so I just wrapped this game up a couple hours ago, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised. I'm not going to put anything into it because it's one game, and he just did not have it. But I don't recall him ever being, you know, this inefficient and just not being able to string together a couple of shots. I have not seen this from him before, and that's unfortunate. I will say this though, Marcus Smart made up for it.
Yeah,
like. Are we at that point where Marcus Smart is becoming a reliable offensive player?
It bums me out so much. Well, honestly, no, because he would always hit shots against the Sixers, and it made me mad, just like when Aaron Baines hit shots against the Sixers. So right. Now, at least if Marcus Smart is consistently hitting shots, it's not like he's only doing it against the Sixers. At least he's... But no, I mean, you're right. This has by far been his best offensive season. And I don't... When he's shooting threes now, I don't get the same glee that I did a few years ago where it's like, okay, cool. It's like the Russell Westbrook. Like, be my guest. Take as many of those as you want. You are wasting an offensive possession. You'll hit a couple, but it's a low percentage shot. No, like he has turned into a confident shooter now, and it's great for the Celtics. It bummed me out.
No, but I really like watching him play, and the great thing about him is, even though he's becoming this more reliable offensive player, somehow he still has the energy to be this all-world defender.
Yeah,
I don't know how he does it, but here we are.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to read too much into the results of this game. Like, the Bucks were without Eric Bledsoe and Pat Connaughton. Kemba, still working his way back from that knee injury, only played 19 minutes. So, you know, I'm joking about the Tatum thing. It's one game. I'm not concerned about it either. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not even going to ask, like, does this change your opinion of either team? Because it shouldn't. There's too much uncertainty here. It's just like Giannis is just, he has not missed a beat. He is ready. He came just ready to destroy. I think he's probably heard all of the chatter about, you know, his future, what's going to happen this offseason with his Supermax, like also the, you know, can the Bucks actually win in the playoffs, or are they just going to continue choking? Like he clearly came to Orlando to silence all of that.
I mean, you know, he's playing the way that he's played over the past two seasons. And I don't even think I can recognize when Giannis, like, takes a step up, because he's just so utterly dominant, even, like, on typical game days.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, this is a video game stat. 36, 15, and 7, yet it falls, right in line with his average,
right.
Like his per-minute average.
Right.
Like, this was actually statistically a pedestrian game.
Yeah.
Yet we looked at it and we went, oh, well, you know, that's him just asserting himself. But no, it was completely average for him.
Right. Yeah.
Which is scary and insane. And yeah.
Yeah. Ho-hum, 36, 15, and 7 with a 3 of steal in the block in, what, 32 minutes, I think? Yeah.
32 minutes. Let me tell you something. This is the craziest thing here. Like, in a couple of years, you know, when he's in his late 20s, and at that point, presumably, like, he's refined himself even more. Like, maybe he's actually gotten back to hitting over 75% from the line. He's become a more reliable three-point shooter. Like, but he's still, like, maintained his, of course, his athleticism, his touch, and all of that. Mm-hmm. At that point, he probably should have, like, two, three, maybe four MVPs. But I think that's when we are going to start asking ourselves, what's the rank here? Like, where does he rank all time?
Yeah.
Like, already right now, where he's at, like, you know, knock on wood, no injuries.
Right.
Like, the projection that he's on, or trajectory that he's on, we're not going to just say a top 10 player when everything is said and done.
Yeah, no. He's...
This could be much, much higher.
Yeah. I mean, again, as you said, it's early. It's not like if he retires today, he is a top 10 player all time. But
right.
But yes, given his development over the past few years, even if he stays, like, even I don't think he's going to plateau here. I think he's going to continue developing, because he's still, wait, he doesn't turn 25 until December, right?
Right.
Oh. yeah. So.
Oh no, you mean 26, right?
Oh, is he 25 now?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's 25.
Either way. I mean, yeah, he's going to continue getting better. But even if he didn't, again, 36, 15, and 7, like, how many guys have had that stat line in 32 minutes in NBA history? Like, those are numbers that you see put up in, like, 1960s box scores when they played 48 minutes a night. And even then, they didn't have the assists, probably. It was just that kind of scoring totals and rebounds. He's just such an unparalleled dominant player on both ends of the court. It was almost like he just wanted to remind everyone, like, oh, you thought there was an MVP debate? Oh, no. Oh, Yeah. No, that's not true.
We always talk about, like, prime years when we're evaluating a player. Like, for example, Reggie Miller's five-year prime is often referred to when you kind of talk about him being a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. Like, is that five-year prime good enough? So Giannis has made the All-Star game the last 4 years. So right now he has a four-year prime going until further notice. In that four-year prime, he's averaging 26.5 points, 11 rebounds, and 5.5 assists per game, shooting 54% from field. Like, that is very, very good, obviously. Now you take one of those years, those years away and you go about just the last three. Now it's 28 points, 12 rebounds, and a 5.5 assists. It's
disgusting.
On 55% shooting.
Just truly disgusting.
I mean, it is so disgustingly good that you all you have to argue, at the very least, if again, knock on wood, that he never has a career-ending injury, but if that were to happen, like, I would consider him just a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame just based on who's already there.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Without question.
Yeah.
All right, Mort, do you want to hit Kings Spurs or Rockets Mavericks?
I guess Rockets Mavericks.
Okay.
I mean, look, when we have a game that all you know had over 300 points, I think we've got to hit on it.
Right, right. So, turns out everything we said about Giannis also applies to James Harden, who scored 49 points, and Luka Doncic, who had a 28-point, 13-rebound, 10-assist triple-double. Also, I mean, great game from Kristaps Porzingis. Takes advantage of the mini Rockets. 39 points, 16 rebounds. Your boy Russ. The most quintessential Russ line. 31 points on 13 of 30 shooting. 11 rebounds, 8 assists, 6 turnovers. Only 1 of 3 from deep, though. He didn't take a ton of 3-point shots, which is good.
Yeah, but you got to give me this one, though. This was one of the unfortunate old Russ games.
Yeah, it was not ideal. Not ideal. But Covington, especially in the overtime, made up for it. Daniel House played really well. They got some good contributions from their bench guys, Rivers, Green, McLemore. And then, I mean, damn, Trey Burke for the Mavericks. Where was this all year, Trey Burke?
I've been waiting for this one. Oh. So Trey Burke, to me, I brought him up before.
I know.
Because remember when he played for the Knicks? It was only this 33-game sample. But he came in, no, wait a second, it was actually more. It was 69. Yeah, I was looking at the wrong date there. But he came in, he played well. And he was scoring, he was diving. And usually when I talk about players on the Knicks, like Marcus Morris, I'm like, those are empty stats. But Burke really seemed confident when he played there. Like there was this sense of maturity, like he was reading it, you know, reading the place well. And then he joined Philly, which, you know, it didn't really go as well as it should have for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure what happened there.
He just always, he fell into Brett Brown's doghouse. I think it was the defense, usually. I mean,
it was the defense?
Yeah, like, oh, well, I mean, Brett doesn't run a ton of pick and roll in general. I'd be honestly intrigued now knowing the move with Ben off the ball and Shake starting. Would he want a do-over with Trey Burke as the backup point guard? But probably not still, because, yeah, the defense right. really seemed to bug Brett.
Yeah. Well, he did have a stint with Dallas before the current stint, because that was before Philly, if I understand it correctly. And, like, he does well in these open systems.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's something that Dallas have, it's an open system.
Yeah.
So I think this is like he's just playing for a team that's kind of leaning into his strengths with his shooting the ball, like you're having the green light to shoot if you're open, not having to second guess yourself, and if it doesn't really work out, oh okay, we have other guys who can step in and do it for you while you know you recalibrate on the bench until the next game.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the sort of thing that he needs to have, like the. You know, the whole mantra around a team just being, we're not going to bench you for taking a shot. Like, just, like, go ahead. Like, we have the best offense in the league. Just shoot. It's fine.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're going to need... They need someone to be a consistent threat off the bench for them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, they have Doncic, they have Kristaps, they have Tim Hardaway Jr., who's had a phenomenal season. I mean, career best season for him, I would argue. Like, I mean, this was my concern with the Mavericks all year, or at least coming into the year, was who's going to be that other guy. It turned out to be Hardaway, but then, you know, you can count on, like, Dorian Finney-Smith some nights, Seth Curry some nights, Maxi Kleber some nights, but there's not usually that one consistent guy. I mean, Jalen Brunson, before he's out now, but he also chipped in there, so it was right. Like a kind of by-committee approach. And I'm not saying Trey Burke is going to have 31 points at 8 threes every night, but if he can be that consistent sixth man where you can expect, you know, low teens or somewhere like 12 to 15, 16 points a night, if you can get that consistently out of him, that's going to give the Mavericks just a little extra oomph. But, I mean,
yeah.
Offense has not been their problem all season.
No, no. And unfortunately, in downtime, Luka did not turn into a DPOY.
No, that's next year.
But I will say this, though. You know, for Porzingis to come out and splash 39 and 16,
yeah.
I kind of felt that was a statement game as well.
Yeah.
Just for him, just basically saying, you know what, I can do this. I can go up on that higher echelon that people are basically just reserving for Luka all the time. I can get there. And not in like a mean-spirited way in trying to show Luka up, but just basically telling everyone around him, you know, I'm here too.
Right.
Which I appreciate. I think that's something the Dallas Mavericks need to see too. Like, Porzingis, what is the this is actually a good question for you. What is the ceiling of Porzingis, like, statistically speaking?
I mean, he would, before the ACL tear, he was on the trajectory of like high 20s points, probably somewhere around right. 10 rebounds a game. Like, yeah, I mean, he put up good numbers this year, but I don't think the Mavs would be happy if, you know, he averaged like almost 20 and 10 a game. Did not shoot particularly efficiently. So, I mean, part of me wonders if it's just him getting more comfortable and more confident in his knee. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, now he's had a full season under his belt, or 52 games. He can, like, treat this as, you know, this is a brand new season for me almost. Like, I got,
yeah.
you know, I made it through 52 games relatively unscathed, did not have any major knee trauma. Now I'm more confident in my body, and like now I can just get back to the trajectory I was on beforehand. Yeah, I mean, like, this is, I don't want to say this is going to become a routine occurrence for him, because, you know, he was going against a team that doesn't start anyone above 6'7". So he has an 8-inch height advantage over anyone on the Houston Rockets right now. So,
yeah,
you know, that certainly helped. But yeah, I mean, there's no reason this guy can't average upward of 30 points a game.
Right. And that's probably not going to happen next to Luka, because then you'll have two guys averaging in that, you know, area, which I don't know if that's feasible. I know Shaq and Kobe did it once. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Maybe it is, especially in today's game where, you know, offense is way more prioritized.
Right.
Maybe they'll be the next pairing who could actually do that. But my point is just this. When we talk about Dallas, we always, like, talk about Luka. We talk about, like, the supporting staff. We kind of forget about the internal development that is sort of expected out of Porzingis.
Yeah.
Like, he is definitely so much more than what he did. Like, this year, you're right, almost 20 and 10, which are good numbers, plus two blocks and 2.5 threes, which overall great numbers, but there's more to be had there. I don't know if he's ever going to be a much better rebounder, but honestly, it doesn't really matter. Rebounding is still more of a team-oriented thing, just as defense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're good at it, great, but you don't need to be, you know, a 12-rebound type of guy. That's just not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as he can give you the points, he can give you the blocks, improve defense, he moves the ball, and, you know, he kind of fits in with Luka. I mean, that's all you can ask for. So I think for this return to the NBA bubble and beyond, like for 2021, this should be a major subplot when we're talking about Dallas.
Oh, like, for sure.
Kristaps Porzingis.
For sure. Yeah. From the Rockets' side, I mean, they did emerge victorious from this game. They did get out-rebounded by 12. Any concern moving forward about, you know, the small ball, how it's going to work for them? you know, looking ahead to the playoffs?
I mean, so far, no, because again, rebounding, like I just said, it's not this individual thing. Mm-hmm. And we have heard from people who are much smarter than us, you know, people who work from the league, that rebounding is one of those things that is just not that important anymore as it used to be. Like, it's more about, like, defense and getting stops and like, contesting shots. And those are just far more important. Like, these are small, very smart people figuring all this thing out. So I'm not really concerned about the rebounding. What I am concerned about for them is just still how can they consistently defend the rim.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one thing for me. So far, they're pulling out wins, and they have Harden, which when you have him and he goes off for 49 points on 20 shot attempts, like, you don't really need a whole lot.
Right.
I'll say as much, though. They really took care of the basketball. Outside of Russ, who had the 6 turnovers, like, only 3 other players had 1 turnover.
Yeah.
They had 9 total, and Dallas had 20. So, you know, and now it becomes a question of averages. Like, can you rely on Houston to be this low turnover team? Like, Harden with 1 turnover, that's not really the norm.
Right.
So, you know, and this is why I can never use one game for anything, because you always see these anomalies in one game.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't really say, oh, this is going to be like the norm moving forward.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, it's made it clear that, and again, this might just be because they're playing the Mavericks and the Mavericks have the best offense of all time, at least based on points per possession. But it's made it clear that this doubling down on small ball, you know, they, as you said, they're going to struggle in terms of rim protection and rebounding. So it is just essentially like first to 150 wins. Like, they have given up on being an elite defensive team like, you know, the Dynasty Golden State Warriors, where it's like, oh, they have a great offense but also a great defense. No, it's just they are going to bomb away from deep. And the Mavericks were willing to play that game. I mean, the Rockets attempted 48 threes. The Mavs attempted 49.
Yeah.
They were willing to go step and step, and it, you know, the Rockets emerged victorious this time, but it'll be really interesting to see how, you know, when we get to the playoffs, depending on who they play, how the contrast in styles, like which team forces the other team's hand first.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to phrase it. Yeah.
Let's quickly end on Spurs Kings, because I just want to give another shout out to Luke Walton for being a fantastic coach. When your opponent is starting 4 guards, Derek White, DeJounte Murray, Lonnie Walker, and DeMar DeRozan, who is fine, wing, guard, whatever you want to call him. Not a big. Why are you starting Rashawn Holmes, Bielitsa, and Harrison Barnes?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? It is truly remarkable that he has not figured out. I mean, I know Buddy Hield played well off the bench, you know, after he moved to the bench during the regular season. He had a stinker against the Spurs, 2 of 13, 6 points. But, like, this, what, I just don't understand. I don't understand what you're trying to do here.
No, this was pretty painful. I mean, the only one who really brought it, you know, outside of De'Aaron Fox, obviously, who had 39, was Bogdan Bogdanovic, right?
Right.
I don't know what to say here. Look, this is a team who declined, you know, a rookie option on Harry Giles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who gave Corey Joseph over $13 million a year. Of course they would hire the wrong coach. Of course they would. Who starts to bench Buddy Hield for no apparent reason.
Right.
This team, man, I remember last year when they started running and we actually bought into it a little bit.
Yeah.
We started talking them up and you and I were like, hey, you know what? This might just work. This was that's one of those situations where you remember Arrested Development, like,
yeah,
you
know, yeah.
These things never work, but they might work for us.
Right. Well, it goes back to what we were saying about the Suns earlier. It's like, we like the talent on this team. You just need the coaching staff at the front office not to screw it up.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for the Kings, they are screwing it up.
The Spurs put 43 points on the board in the first quarter.
Yeah.
The Spurs.
Yeah.
The San Antonio Spurs. This is usually one of their halftime scores, man.
And honestly, I mean, credit to Greg Popovich, because he came into this saying, we are probably not going to make the playoffs. We know the odds. There are multiple teams ahead of us. Like, we are without LaMarcus Aldridge. We are going to prioritize developing our young guys. And what have we been saying all year? We want more minutes with White and Murray. What did we get last night? Those two start next to each other. Lonnie Walker starts in there as well. And all three played relatively well. I mean, Derek White, I feel like I want to go back into the Bleacher Report app and, like, all of the people who were confused about why I liked Derek White when I was the GM of Denver.
Oh, right. Yep.
This is why. Derek White's good.
He is, especially when he allows himself to be aggressive.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if White, Murray, Walker is viable long-term as a starting trio. I think probably one of them will have to move to the bench eventually, but given the hand he's playing with right now, I don't blame Greg Popovich for using that and, you know, just getting these guys valuable minutes. But man, it's the Spurs. It's like, I actually really like that combo of guards and Jakob Poeltl too. Clearly they're just stuck between two eras right now where you have this DeRozan, Rudy Gay, Patty Mills, Aldridge. You'll have to move on from them at some point. But if you move on from those guys and you get something in return and you could turn the team over to this young core, I like these players a lot.
There's a lot to like. I mean, Kelton Johnson received 30 minutes of play. Well, granted, because of Deontay picking up fouls, and being in foul troubles, like he had like four or five fouls at the end. Like, he didn't play a lot, so that's part of it. But even then, I still like to see it. I still like to see Pop go this route. And even if he just kind of reserves 37, almost 38 minutes for DeMar, like, okay, fine. Yeah. I get it. Just get all the other kids out there and get them a run. Yeah, I appreciate that. I think for them, they're approaching this the right way. You know, we're not going to do anything here in this bubble. This is all for next season and beyond. I like that. We've talked about how they probably should have taken this approach earlier, but I guess the only thing I can say is better late than never.
For sure.
This is where we are.
Yeah.
So kudos for the Spurs for doing it and for, you know, pulling out the win.
Yeah.
I mean, this was not expected. I have this feeling that Pop is just kind of like laughing in his mask a little bit. Like, oh man, I didn't even like expect to win anything here.
Yeah.
But the Kings just gave it to us because Kings.
Right. Yeah, what it would be so Spurs if they were the ones to force the play-in game.
Yeah. Oh, God. That would be fantastic. Shout out to Jesse if that happened.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, for real. No, but I wonder with DeRozan, you might not get this analogy, but in the NFL, when you have a running back in a contract year, oftentimes the teams will just like give him 300 plus carries, which is known to be bad and known to cut down on guys' careers because they're just like, we're not going to pay you. So, yeah, we'll just overuse you. It's fine. So I wonder if this is like Pop's parting gift. He's like, you know, you clearly hate it here and we have no interest in keeping you. So play 40 minutes. That's fine.
That would be vicious. That would be very, very vicious. But I'd be okay with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, I think it is just you're dealing with a depleted roster. DeMar DeRozan is clearly one of your better players. You got to, you know, you do at least have to feign attempting to win these games early on when you're still in this competitive race. So it'll...
Right. And look, he's good. I mean, again, we crap on his reluctance to take threes. But I mean, at no point will I make the argument that DeMar DeRozan isn't good. Like, so it's against the Kings. It's one game. It doesn't really matter. But 27 points on 13 shot attempts. Got to the line 9 times, made 7. 10 assists, 5 boards. Now, that's a good, solid-ass production.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it is. And it's never been, you know, a problem of DeRozan to put up numbers. It's been a question of, can he put up the right numbers at the right time? Can he become this guy that he should become? Because in my opinion, he's too good of a shooter not to be taking four threes a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is just a matter of leaning into it a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
But, I mean, we've had that conversation millions upon millions of times.
And we probably will more this offseason, especially if he opts out.
Yes. Oh, God. Yeah, absolutely we will. Can we just copy-paste that? Is that fair? Yeah.
It's a little harder to do with podcast segments, but we'll work on it.
We'll work on it. We'll just present it and have the most rough cut ever.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. Well, that is probably a good place for us to wrap up. Thank you to everyone who's listening, and hope you're staying safe out there. Hope you're enjoying watching basketball. Please just stay home and watch basketball for the next 2 weeks as much as you can. Because, I mean, this has been like, it's like March Madness, but just 2 weeks straight instead of just the weekends or just like the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Like Monday, we also get games starting at 2 o'clock. It's just unbelievable that we went from no sports for 4 months to, you know, boom, here's 12 hours of basketball every day.
Right.
I'm loving it.
I'm loving it too. I have a hard time catching up every day, yeah. But I mean, look, I'll get to it. I'll make it.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good problem for us to have. I am happy to have that problem again. But please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio. Please also, you can find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found on iTunes. Please subscribe, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we are being hosted on Spreaker. So check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and Mort, do you have any movie reviews for us?
I do.
Ooh, okay.
I do. I was watching that movie called Hustlers with Jennifer Lopez and Julia Stiles. That was surprisingly good. I came in with very, very low expectations, but it was good. Like, it was well acted. It was well performed. The plot was pretty good as well. Like, there was a lot of... Like, you know, you kind of forget sometimes how good of an actress Jennifer Lopez is. Like, many people thought she started out as a singer instead of an actress, but it was the other way around. And you can sort of sense that here. She's coming into her own in this age as well, where she's, like, really relying on her craft. I was surprised. It was really good. I gave it a 7 out of 10.
Oh, okay. Well, I would like to have words with our mutual friend Mark Deeks, because I have a new trash TV recommendation. And I'm mad that he never told me about this. So we had Jersey Shore, which is just a bunch of absolute garbage people from New Jersey getting drunk every night.
Of course, because garbage people live in New Jersey. Correct. Yeah.
England has Geordie Shore.
Yeah. I knew about that before I knew about the other one. Yeah.
We went down a Geordie Shore rabbit hole recently.
Oh, God, Brian.
It's incredible. People, you have to, like, there's no easy way to watch it, unfortunately. So we subscribe to an Amazon Prime MTV Hits trial for 7 days. You really have to binge watch it. If you want to go down this rabbit hole, save it for the off season because you've got limited time. But if you enjoy Jersey Shore, this is Jersey Shore on steroids. And I mean that in the best possible way.
I'll never get this. I will never get your fascination with this kind of television, but you know what? You do you.
A girl literally urinated on camera. Like, just surprise. She got knocked over by a towel. She was getting out of the hot tub, gets knocked over by a towel, stands up, and just starts peeing. And, like, I've just never...
I mean, you know what? I've been to England numerous times, and I've been to England on Friday nights.
Yeah.
This doesn't surprise me.
Oh, man. I might need to go back once all COVID is over just to meet these people.
Look, I'll tell you something. You and I, we need a hot tub time machine, and we need to go back to our early 20s, and then we need to hit up, like, Manchester or, like, the outskirts of London in like, the, what, early 2010s.
But these people,
it's wild.
They get so drunk every night. Like, I don't know how they survive.
Dude, I don't even need to watch a reality TV show to know that. Just, if you're traveling around Europe, there will be, you know, English tourists all over. And sure. They're usually rated like the worst tourists ever. Like, they, you know, most countries like, oh God, not them again.
Yeah.
But they party hard, man. It is unbelievable. Like, I cannot in good conscience tell you a story that I have from when I was in Spain at some point during my teens, because it would be too R-rated. But let's just say that two women were acting very inappropriately in the middle of the street.
It's amazing. Yeah, so if you want a taste of that, watch Jordy Shore come mid-October. You could break up your Woj bombs with that, because, man, it's been a real treat. And on that note, go watch some basketball, everyone. We will catch you in a couple days.
All right. Don't die, Brian.
You too.